another day. Another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream.
Hi, this is Jack Spirko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. Today, folks, is Tuesday, October the 7th, 2008. And if you didn't listen to my podcast on Thursday last week, or you're not on my email notification list, you may have wondered, where has Jack been for the past couple days? It seems like I've done a show just about every weekday for a couple months now. And here comes a Friday and a Monday, and no Survival Podcast. And I got some emails. Some of y'all are detoxing. And I guess I'm flattered by that, but come on, man. I got like 300 or 400 hours of material out there. If you haven't listened to all of it, when I take a break, go listen to some of the older shows, even the ones with the bad audio quality. I think the content was pretty good. And so some of y'all are pretty dedicated listeners. You've listened to everything. I got an email from a guy that said, I found you 2 weeks ago. I've already listened to every show. And I'm like, God, this guy must have listened almost nonstop for 2 weeks to catch up with me. But he did. So I'm really flattered when I hear that, folks. And if I pick on you a little bit, it's just because I consider y'all friends. And you can ask my friends. The more I like you, the more I pick on you. But the Black Ops people didn't get me. The October assassination people didn't get me from that conspiracy stuff. I just took a vacation. I took a Friday and a Monday off, and we went up to our little homestead retreat in Arkansas, and we painted is mostly what we did. And we took walks around the hills, and every time I go up there, I look at the land and just think of how I'm going to shape it eventually when I get there, and where I'm going to clear some stuff out, where I'm going to leave the wood standing, and it replenishes my soul, and it gives me a lot of faith in our own personal future and where we're going to end up and the type of survival lifestyle we're going to create for ourselves if times get tough or even if they don't. And it looks to me like things are fixing to get tough. I've gotten a lot of emails to me over the weekend while I was gone, basically saying the same thing. Oh shit, we're in deep trouble. What do we do now? Because, of course, the stimulus package that was a $700 billion package got shot down in the House because people like yourself call up your congressman and threaten to fire his ass and scared the shit out of him. And then it came back, it went to the Senate. The Senate jacked another $150 billion on it that we do not have in the form of some decent stuff. I mean, some of it is tax incentives for companies that don't deserve them, but the majority of it actually does help middle-income people and a small to medium-sized business with tax incentives to spur the economy. So those $150 billion are not all bad, but they still have the $700 billion of cancer attached to it. No one proposed cutting a dime from anything else to fund the $150 or the $700. So you would think when they sent it back to a body of government that had already shit-canned it, that it wouldn't pass. But of course it did. And a lot of folks swung over, and Nancy opened up her Rolodex, and she called some of her people she told to vote against it and said, I don't think you're really in danger of losing your seat. The Democratic Party's probably going to pick up seats in this election anyway. They're getting the blame for it. You go ahead and swing. You stay put. Things like that happened on the Republican side, the Republican leadership that was willing to do it, and they pulled enough votes over to take what was a narrow defeat into a done deal, and it went on to the president, and he signed it. And everybody looked at the stock market and said, go up, and it didn't. It didn't go up. In fact, it closed Friday under 10,000 for the first time in a very long time. And that 10,000 number is a psychological number. It means something to a lot of investors. We'll probably see it climb back over it today, and you probably will see it climb over it and maybe fall back down under it again. Who knows? I don't know what's going to happen with the market. I am not a market oracle. I try to tell you what I think is going to happen. It's just my opinion. And when I tell you my opinion of what the market's going to do, it's like me telling you my opinion of what's going to happen when the Cowboys and the Steelers play. And, you know, some of my bias will creep into that because I'm a Steelers fan. And if I really think it's a mismatch for, and the Cowboys are going to take it, I'll admit it. But if it looks like it's going to be close, I'm going to say the Steelers are going to pull it out because they're my team. My bias of the economy is that I know the fundamentals of the economy, and I try to use them when I make a determination of what's going to happen. But there's an emotional powder keg out there right now that's causing a lot of this volatility. In other words, people are freaking out, and they're saying, give me my money. right? And now the small people are starting to do it. And, I mean, if you were smart and if you've listened to this show, you probably already did some of that. You already probably moved some of your investments from these high risk investments, these solid mutual funds as they're sold to you, and put them into things like, you know, security-backed bonds or just straight money funds or some metals or whatever. If you do that now, personally, again, not a financial advisor, if you've already had the drop and you rode through this thing, I think you might be making a mistake. But, I mean, I don't know. I don't really know. I know that when the market was trading up around 12,000 earlier in the year, that I knew that the jig was up and it was time to get out, and I did. And it had, you know, the market kind of dipped down there in March, and that's when I bailed, and it had like a little bit of a recovery and started to look really good all the way up into almost June. It went to, you know, almost new heights again. And people said, ah, I see what you did. And I said, which white? And then all this mess came out, and boom, it dropped down. I don't know. I think a floor to the market right now where they would shut down trading is about 8,700. I think at 8,700, the government's going to, like, shut the market down and make it wait till it's not going to drop anymore to let it back up. So if you're sitting at 9,900, I think your risk is mitigated a little bit there on how much more you can lose. And the other side of this is that markets do tend to, once they hit a bottom, to go back up. So, yeah, you got to consider that. Hopefully, you secured some of your investments. All right. Right now, I don't see any reason to be real optimistic about the global economy in the short term. So what would I do? I would take most of the money that you have to save, maybe even reduce your contributions that you're putting in your 401k for a while. Again, it's just my opinion, and put more of it into savings. I've been asked a lot of people, you know, what's the safest place I can put my money and still have it accessible and make a decent return? Well, if you think 4% is a decent return, check out ING Direct. Now, I told that to somebody this weekend, and they said, didn't they go broke? No, that's AIG. They're an insurance company. ING, orange. ING Direct, Google them. They have a savings account that pays 4% with very few stipulations attached to it. And that's going to be a good place for money to go right now. And those guys are financially secure and financially sound. So I would be saving money. I would also continue to do the things that you've always done. And that's what I'm going to talk about today, is just what do you do forward. But before I do that, I want to explain to you how flawed this Federal Reserve System is. And I came up with a new way over the weekend to explain this. And I think it might help you, even if you understand it, to explain it to other people in a way that 'll make complete sense. As you know, if you listen to this show, and if this is your first show, you may not know this, the Federal Reserve is not part of the United States government. Okay? It is not. It is a private entity. Federal Express is as much a part of the government as the Federal Reserve is. All right? It is not owned by the government. It is very loosely checked with controls by the government. The Federal Reserve can really do whatever it wants, including tell the U.S. government, go screw, we're turning the money off, or, you know what, open up, we're shoving it in whether you want it or not. Okay? The Fed has that kind of power. All right? Now, one of the chief powers the Federal Reserve has is the ability to print money. To print money out of thin air. Now, this does not come for free, though, because one, when they give us money, they issue it to people, they issue it to the government or to major corporations at the highest level, and it trickles down into the economy, it comes with debt saddled to it, which is the prime rate. That's the amount that banks are charged to borrow money from the Fed, all right? Which I believe is 2%. They may have cut it. I'm not sure. It doesn't matter. They print the money, and the money is issued as a form of a debt certificate. When you hold a dollar, you hold a debt for a dollar and 2 cents in your hand. That is outside of the Chinese, outside of the British, outside of anybody else loaning us money, outside of bonds, outside of T-bills, outside of everything. The very issuance of a dollar, when you print it, it comes with debt attached to it. We can never be out of debt as a people. All right? Let's leave that part out of the equation for this analogy, because it's not necessary to see how destructive this is and how much power the Fed really has. There's a game called Monopoly. Now, when you play Monopoly, everybody takes a little figure. You're the dog, you're the hat, you're whatever, right? And everybody rolls dice, you move around a board, and there's pricing set. And you pay certain prices for different properties, and you build houses and hotels. You can mortgage out the property once you've built it. You can regain capital. It works a lot like the banking system used to work during the days of the gold standard. And what I mean by that is there is a limit to how much money there is. And all the pricing is set around that limit of money. If you notice, you probably never seen sitting next to a box of a Monopoly game in a store a package of extra money, right? You don't go out and buy twice as much money and stick it into the game, right? There's a cap on the total amount of money. Well, try this. Go out and get yourself some money, some Monopoly money. Scavenge it from another board, mark it somehow so you can get it back where it needs to go or whatever, okay? Play a game of Monopoly. But in this game of Monopoly, give the person that holds the position of the banker, all right? Take all the extra money, put it in a pile to the side. Tell him he can move money from that pile into the game or out of the game any time he wants to, all right? Including giving it to himself, all right? He can issue the money to himself, all right? And when he issues money to somebody, he can do it under any terms that he chooses, all right? So if nobody will loan you money on your piece of property and he just likes you, right, he can give you some money, right? Or he can give you some money as a form of collateral. He can go ahead and use, instead of his money in his personal pile, he can pull it from the reserve pile to loan it to you against your property. But even though it wasn't his money, he gets to hold your property as collateral. Play a game of Monopoly like that. And you might be thinking, this is stupid. Oh my, I don't want to play Monopoly like that. I know who's going to win. The banker's going to win. He can buy anything he wants whenever he wants to. All right. The other side is, if you get a smart banker, get somebody that understands money, not only will he move money into the economy, he will take money out of the economy. Remember, the board is the economy. And the money in the hands of the players, including the banker, is the economy. The separate pile is not the economy. So as people begin to become low on money, what he can do is move money from his own big pile, because he's making the most of it, out of the economy. When he moves the money out of the economy and actually takes the number of dollars left in the game below the per player number when the game started, okay, this might sound like it's going over here, it's not. Let's just say there's $100,000 in the game, and there's four players. There's $25,000 for every player. Now, not every player starts with $25,000, but there's $25,000 in the bank that could go out to four players. Now he pushes the supply of money down to $85,000 while he's holding the majority of the money. What happens is the value and the power of the money in his pile just went way up. And he can run that cycle as many times as he wants until not a single person owns anything. And everybody in the game is in debt to him. And he can do it very quickly. Instead of having these Monopoly games that go for 6 hours, 8 hours long, you play a game like that, it'll run maybe two. But the banker could make it run for 100 hours if he wants to, if you give him this power. Right? If you tell him when, he can win. If you tell him lose, he can lose. If you can tell him make it run and continue to grow your pile until the longest duration period you can, if he's smart about the way he does it, he can. It's exactly how the Federal Reserve works. Except instead of siphoning the money from two Monopoly, extra Monopoly games, they've siphoned the money from thousands of them. They don't just have extra money in a pile. They have a printer that they can just dial in a number and print the money. All right. Now, if you add debt to that equation, it's too complex to do that in a Monopoly game. To say that when I give you this dollar, you owe me $1.02. But if you add debt to that equation, it gives even more power to the banker. Right? This is how the Federal Reserve works today. And that's such a simple, easy-to-understand reason of why it's a screw job. I can't believe I never thought of it before. But try it sometime. Just sit down and play for 15 minutes. And watch how different the game is when the banker has the ability to create his own money at will, to issue it at will, and to remove it from the board. Find the smartest guy you know about the economy. Make him the banker. Let him teach you. He will school you how much power this is. All right? Because if you give it to a kid, he'll just start buying everything, and he'll still win. Right? But he'll win in a very clumsy, obvious way. Right? It'll be kind of a mess for everything. Give it to a person that understands contraction and expansion in the money supply, and they will dazzle you with what they could do. It might take them a game or two to figure out how to really do it, but once they do, You'll be amazed. You'll be able to tell that person, I want this game to last exactly 4 hours, and I want it over. And I want Joe to win, and I want you to have a little bit of money left, but you're going to call it a draw. I want you to make this game last 1 hour, and I want you to win. You'll be able to tell them whatever you want. And if they're smart, they'll be able to watch the clock, sit there with a calculator, know the total amount of money, and they'll be able to manipulate the system any way they want to. It's pretty easy to do when there's only four people playing in a fixed amount of money, right? The Federal Reserve has to use supercomputers to do this today, but they do the same thing. They're playing a giant game of Monopoly. That's why our economy's in trouble. So now that I've kicked that pig pretty hard, what do we do now? Well, we do what we've always done, okay? We do what we've always done, and we keep doing it. Here's what I want you to realize. Do not freak out. I keep saying this. Do not freak out. Are we in for a recession? Yes. Could it be the depression? Yeah, it could. Do I think it's going to be a depression this time? I don't yet. But I got those hairs on the back of my neck standing up that it could be, all right? Now, the thing is, it's not the time to freak out because you are aware right now when you have the ability to do something. If you've done nothing up till now, you're still about 1,000 light years ahead of the average schmuck that's out there on the street with his hands in his pockets looking at his 401k balance, thinking his entire life hinges on it. First thing, your 401k, your IRA, anything that's in a retirement account. If you are under 40, relax. Okay? Relax. If you're over 40, you have a varying degree of concern based on how much you've lost, how much you're depending on it, and when you're going to take it out. But if you're under 40, you have to wait till you're 59 and a half to get it anyway. You're looking at least 20 years. A lot of stuff's going to happen in 20 years. A lot of it's going to be positive. A lot of it's going to be negative. All right? But relax. Anything 20 years out from retirement. If you're 50, but you're going to work until you're 70, you're in the same boat as the guy that's 40 that's going to work until he's 60. So you can relax too. If you're 58, 59 years old and you're planning on retiring at like 65 and you just took this hit on the market, if you walk down to whoever advises you about your investments and beat the guy, didn't kill him but beat him severely with a baseball bat, and you got put on a trial and I was on a jury, you would never get convicted. I'll tell you that right now. Because you shouldn't have been in investments like that at that age. And a lot of people are. There's a lot of people already retired that are still in investments like that. It's criminal. It's absolutely criminal, but it's being done. I've talked about financial advisors before. These guys are not bad guys. They don't know what they're doing. Forgive them, for they know not what they do, okay? To quote the Bible there. What they're trained to do is keep the money in the market by any means necessary. Keep the money in the market. Never let somebody bring all their money out of the market. You're doing them a disservice. The market always comes back. It always posts good returns. But when you're planning on using that money, you've got to get your money out. All right? Here's the big problem we have right now. The baby boomers are going to pull their money out like crazy, even with a down market, because they need the money now. All right? So we've got that issue. But, again, 20 years from now, everything's different. All right. 10 years from now, things are probably going to be really good. 10 months from now, they're probably going to suck a lot worse. 10 years from now, they'll probably be really good. So if you're looking at that timeline, you know, you can reevaluate as the market rebounds as to what to do, how to solidify your investments. You've already taken the loss. Bailing now probably will not help. Probably will not help. Again, you have to make your own decisions. With the money that you're bringing in, though, I don't know that we're done with this downward sling, and you may need cash. Now is the time, while you're still employed, while you're still making money, while you can find a second job, do anything you can to increase your income and reduce your expenses to the bone. Cut your expenses to the bone. Push your income to the max. Take three jobs if you have to. All right? If you have a really good income, you don't have to. All right? If you have a really good income and you have some free time, start figuring out how you can make money for yourself. All right? Go listen to my show on different odd jobs and things that you can do. Right? Start thinking about, is there a business that you can create that's recession-proof? All right? If you don't have it, go make it. All right? You don't have time to screw around with trying to start a business when you're making $15,000 a year. You need to up your income to at least 30. If you're at 30, you probably need to set a target to get it to at least 40. All right? Increase your income by $10,000 as quick as you can. Save every dime. If you are sitting on $10,000 in cash, you'll make it through just about any situation you have to. As long as you're not in a $600,000 house with an $80,000 income. And if you are, I have very little sympathy for you, and I think most of my listeners have very little sympathy for you as well. All right, because you shouldn't be in that situation. Invest in food now. Food will probably go up by 10 to 15% in the next 6 months. food is going to go way up through the winter. It's going to take one major weather event to really jack it up. Nothing's going to pay you 10 to 15% on your money. If it's food that you will eat eventually, okay, now I'm not talking about MREs and T-rations and number 10 cans here. I'm talking about dried rice, dried beans, dried meals, anything, stuff even that goes in the refrigerator, any food substance right now that can be stored for a minimum of 6 months and still be good, begin to stockpile it. You should have been doing this anyway. If you haven't, start doing it now. It is not just for the apocalypse. It is not just for the end times. It is so that if you belt up, like, let's say, a one-year supply, and the economy really went in a crapper, and your income went down, you could maybe draw from your reserves and continue to buy new at the same time, and at the end of that year, you're still sitting on 6 months' worth, but you've cut your food budget during that year in half, all right? That's one way to use your preps, okay? It's not like your preps are something you never eat. You should be rotating your food anyway. Step that up now. Right now, this second, the next time you go in the store, buy at least one damn thing that you like to eat, that you want to eat, that will store, that you are not going to eat in the next 2 weeks, and put it into your storage ladder, and keep doing it. Keep doing it. Keep. I don't care if it's one thing a week. I don't care if it's 10 things a week. I don't care what the number is. Do something. Do not freak out and go out and buy $600 worth of freeze-dried food in tins. You'll probably never eat it. All right. Never buy anything in quantity until you taste it first. All right. This is about survival, even if we don't have the road warrior outside your house. Even if they don't burn the cities to the ground. Okay. Survival is about you. It's about you and your family and the people that you care about. Every day, somebody has the end of the world as they know it, even if it's not the end of the world as we know it. This is the main thing that you prepare for. Remember, your order of survival preparations are individual, family, neighborhood, local, regional, national, global. All right? In that order. All right? You do everything you can for your individual survival first. All right? Because if you're the one that thinks that way, your survival is key to making sure that your family will be able to survive, which is your next priority. Once you're sure that you're going to be able to survive at the family level, then you have to start worrying about, well, what happens if there's a disaster that affects my neighborhood? We're under quarantine. There's a dirty bomb in the city, and we're safe, but we can't leave our neighborhood. There's a flu pandemic, all right, that's specifically local in my area. All right, and it's affecting my neighborhood. It's a short-term thing. All right, that's the next most likely. Then regional. The whole damn state's under quarantine. All right. National. The whole nation's under a quarantine. Very limited movement throughout the entire country. Or there's been some kind of a catastrophe that's impacted the entire country. Or the economy has melted to the ground. Right. And if the economy melts to the ground, it's probably not global. It's probably not national. It's probably the last one. Global. The whole world's in trouble. The whole world's in trouble right now, economically. The reason our stock market didn't go back after our geniuses threw the money into this puddle is because it's not just our economy that's screwed right now. We're not the cause of it, all right? We're one of the causes of it. Everybody's been playing this game. The Germans have been playing this game. The English have been playing this game. The French have been playing this game. And this Ponzi scheme is falling apart all over the world right now. But it's going to create a catastrophe, even though it's a global problem. The first place you will see catastrophe for it is in your own personal, individual life. So again, individual, family, neighborhood, regional, national, local, in that order. Think that way in your preps. The next thing you need to do is don't stop believing in creating that special life for yourself. Okay? Everything, the best way I can put this, everything in the world is about to go on sale. We're about to have the biggest sell-off of assets in the history of the world. People are going to dump stuff. People are going to panic. You know, you might need a pickup. Maybe you don't need it for commuting, but maybe out on that homestead you want a pickup. You want some old beat-up truck, right? You want a four-wheel drive that can pull stuff that you could even put a plow blade on and use in lieu of a tractor, right? You want to maybe even cut the roof off the damn thing, right? Hey, you know what? Those things are fixing to go on sale. Homesteads, people's family members die all the time. Most of the rural land is owned by older people today still. When these older people die, these families cannot afford to relocate to the country. Most of them don't even want to. They probably left that place. It might kill them to do it, but they're going to sell it. And then when they sell it now in the next 6 months, next year, they're going to sell it for pennies on the dollar. Because nobody has credit. Because there's no big booming market out there for real estate right now. So real estate's going to go on sale. Everything that you can think of that's a long-term commodity-based thing is going to go on sale. The only thing I really see appreciating in value over the next year is going to be food. Because food is a direct supply-demand correlation. The demand will increase no matter what, because the global population is increasing no matter what. We're continuing to siphon off the food supply to create biofuels. All right, so there's going to be, and the value of money is going down. All right, and food you can't live without. So food's going to appreciate in value. That's why I'm telling you that it makes sense to continue your preparations along the lines of storing food. But everything else, not everything else, but most other things are going to go on sale. Specifically, vehicles and property are going to go on sale. So if you work really hard right now to lay up some extra money, you do whatever you can, you may get an opportunity. The other thing that's going to go on sale is going to be recreational shit, okay? You know, that travel trailer the guy never uses, right? A big mobile home he can't afford to put a dollar of gas into anymore. You know, some of these mobile homes are gorgeous, right? Well, you might not drive around in it. You might buy a piece of land, get an electrical and phone brought into it, pull the damn thing onto it, and live in it, if that's what you want to do. I tell you what, my wife will never let me do it. All right, but that is an option out there, and that's something that's, or maybe you just want a little one, one of these little pull around ones, you know, 22-footer, 24, 26-footer, and you want to use it to create like an extra building on your compound, right? Because there's a lot of sense in that. Instead of trying to shove everything into a house where you have to heat it and cool it all the time, you have a smaller home, and then maybe you locate certain other things, or maybe it's like a guest house for the overflow that you know eventually is going to come. Well, there's a little travel trailer out there. It's heated, it's cooled, it's insulated, it's got plumbing, it's got bath, right? It's got a refrigerator. There you go. You pay me a little bit of rent, and go live out there and find a job in town, right? I mean, that may be, I mean, it's up to you how you live your life, but I'm going to tell you that trailers like that, the travel trailers and stuff like that, they're going to be flooding the market, all right? If you work for a manufacturer of those things, look for another job right now because your job's going to be in jeopardy. Sales on stuff like that's going to go way down. Boats are going to go way down. Boats will probably drop more than trailers. At least you can live in a trailer. And unless you're talking about these big mega boats that you can live on, I'm talking about speed boats, power boats, bass boats, right? People aren't going to be able to afford to spend time on the lake. They're going to be working, all right? They're not going to be able to afford gas for the damn things because their money is in shorter supply, and they don't really do anything for you. So it would be a luxury purchase. I'm not running out to buy one, but I'll tell you what, you're going to see some very, very inexpensive boats on the market, only a few years old, as long as the guy was smart enough to pay it off. There's going to be a lot of them sitting out there getting repossessed. You have to wait for the bank to turn around and sell. But there's going to be a lot of good deals there. So there's going to be good deals everywhere. So this is the time, again, you keep your head. You do what you can right now to save, conserve your money, all right? Save, 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 save. Don't buy anything you do not need. The stuff you need to be buying today is stuff you need today or you will need tomorrow only. Do not justify in your mind that, oh, I'm going to need this, all right? Don't go spending a fortune on guns right now, all right? I know a lot of guys in the survival industry really lean toward the firearm side of things. I've talked about a basic battery of firearms, a basic collection, and, you know, they are the shotgun, the rifle, the .22 rifle, and the handgun. If you have that, you're in pretty good shape, all right? You might need an extra gun for a family member, all, but are they comfortable using it? If they're not, don't even bother, all right? You know, I'm not buying any guns anytime soon right now. I'm good. I've got that done. I might buy a little bit more ammo, but I'm not waiting for the Armageddon to come. That's not what I see here, all right? And most people don't, if you're rational. If you think about the history of this country, if you think about the history of the world, what happens when these societies break down? When there are mobs, who do the mobs blame? They don't blame you. They blame the government, and they blame the wealthy. You know who's going to get stormed? All those big estates out in California, people will storm those. They'll storm the Capitol Rotunda. They'll storm the White House. All right. Eventually, I think this country's due for a revolution. It's going to happen. People are going to snap out. It might be at the ballot box and be bloodless. It might be in the streets and be bloody. one way or another, it's not going to be comfortable. It's going to require sacrifice, even if it's not in the form of blood. If it's not in the form of blood, it will be in the form of treasure. All right? Your goal as a survivalist isn't to lead the revolution. It's to survive it. And that may be, mean being a non-participant in certain parts of it. Right? Just because a bunch of wackos grab guns and head to the Capitol doesn't mean you should do it too. That's going to be a real quick way to get eliminated, to die. And then you failed your goal as a survivalist. You keep your head down in these situations. You think about creating a lifestyle for yourself that you can maintain. You don't talk to people, in public about the fact that you have 6 months worth of food. You don't do that. All right? I do it here because I have to. But if you come get it, I think that most people listening to the show would know you're going to have a fight on your hands. You're better off going down and trying to rob, the storeroom behind Walmart than you are coming trying to get my stuff, because you ain't getting it. All right? Plus, you'd have to find where we are anyway. I just think that right now, though, again, what you really have to do is you have to just keep your head, keep your wits, and keep thinking about what you can do for yourself, for your family. Continue to do the long-term things as well. Continue to think both permaculture and agriculture if you already own the land that you plan to stay on. All right? A lot of people are really hesitant to go out and plant trees because it's like, well, a tree's not going to produce for 5 to 7 years. Well, then you better plant it today. All right? Plant fruit trees. Plant nut trees. Take care of them. First couple of years, they need to be watered often. They need to be fertilized. They need to be pruned. They need to be taken care of. If you just stick them in the ground and you don't take care of them, they'll die. And you've wasted the resource. Plant vines, shrubs, things that continue to produce for you. I'm going to do a show on some real neat new fruit-producing permaculture crops that I've just discovered through a catalog supply company. All kinds of stuff from Russia and Turkey and all over the world that grows very well here. These are things that are perennial. They come back every year. They're permaculture crops. Keep working on your agriculture. Learn to grow your own food. All right? We just I came back from Arkansas. I had picked the beans from my purple climbing beans, pole beans, right before we left. Came back, and I just picked this huge bowl full of them that grew up over this last 4 days. All right? There's a tremendous opportunity out there to grow your own food, even on small lots. If you only have one or two places where you can afford to put a tree where it won't create shade and destroy your ability to grow crops, plant one or two trees. You'd be amazed what a couple pecan trees can produce, or what a couple peach trees, or a couple apple trees can produce. Learn about the stuff that's in you. It's all the stuff that we've been saying all this time. This is the time to just keep doing it. Look for deals. Look for bargains. All right, people need money now. And people are going to need money more in the future. So this is your time to make money so that when people are in the greatest need, you have the greatest opportunity to buy the things which you want. All right? The wealthy people in the world see a recession or even a depression as the greatest opportunity that exists. When the economy is booming, everything's expensive, there's a limit to profit. When the economy is down, the wealthy people have the greatest opportunity to make money. That's why recessions and depressions are created by that banker in the monopoly game in the first place. So the wealthy people can make more. It may be hard to understand. Just trust that it's true. The wealthiest people make the most money when the market's in recession. That's why Warren Buffett, one of the most genius financial people in the world, is out spending billions right now. Because he knows that things are on sale. All right? So you might be thinking, well, that's great for them, but I'm not wealthy. Ha, my friends, if you listen to this show, if you practice the things that I talk about, and if you create the lifestyle for yourself that you want, you can continue to live if times get tough, or even if they don't, you are among the wealthiest people in the world, right? Wealth is not about total dollars. For some people it is, and if that's you, I probably can't help you. Right, because your solution is simple. Make sure you stay employed, work no matter what you have to do, always live below your means, and continue to store money. Stockpile it in investments, stockpile it in bonds, stockpile it anywhere you want to, and go away from me, because I can't help you any more than that. Because that's a simple solution for acquiring money. If you are of the type of mindset that is the Survival Podcast, making that money and saving it is only one component. It's how you spend it that's the most important thing. How you allocate it. How you create a lifestyle for yourself where you need as little of it as possible, but have all the things that you truly want that make you happy. I am happier taking a walk on a piece of mountain property where I see one or two people that are, you know, neighbors that live hundreds of yards away from me that wave to me, and then just walking a little further and seeing no one for an hour-long walk, and seeing deer and hearing the sounds of the forest, than I would ever be driving a Maserati. Cost me a lot less to live the first lifestyle than the second. I'm just aware of that, and I've set my life according to it. If you listen to this show, my guess is that that would be the same for you. And you might change exactly where the place is, exactly what the scenario is, but I bet you taking a walk will give you more richly rewarding experience than driving a Maserati. So set up a lifestyle designed for your rewarding experience, for your dreams, for your hopes, for what you need. Don't stop doing it just because everybody else is just falling apart. It's natural for everybody else to fall apart right now because they've been living beyond their means. Okay? They've been living a fallacious life. They've been living a fictitious life. They've been living on borrowed money. This must occur. How bad it will get, how long it will last, we don't know. But we know that it had to occur. We're now seeing it occur. It's going to happen. Don't buy into the lies. I said this before. You're going to start hearing, you got to go out and spend money for Christmas. You're going to hear it in various ways. But that if the economy is going to go into a deeper recession, if retailers don't see a good Christmas, don't skimp on Christmas. I'm telling you to skimp on Christmas with money. And spend it with heart. Do you know what? I gave you a way to make beer bread. You know what? Go get some bottles of beer, empty bottles, the big bottles. Yeah, like the quarts or like the 16 ounces or whatever. I don't know how big a bottle you'll need. But get some empty beer bottles. Make sure they're bone dry. Take the beer bed mix and put it inside the bottle and stick a cap on it. All right? Put a ribbon on it. Put a preparations card on the side of it with a bow. Give that out as a Christmas present. I ain't going to make any money off of it. I don't want your money. I want you to have your money. All right? You know, that's a type of a Christmas gift you can give. You got a bunch of kids in the family, you always give them something. You know, right now you can buy Silver Eagles for like 13, 14 bucks a piece. Go out and buy all of them a Silver Eagle instead of a $40, you know, toy that they're going to throw away. All right? And that's, you know, if you have kids, you know, immediate family, like sons and daughters, you probably do more than that for them. But nephews, nieces and stuff, that's enough. It's enough this year. Tell them what that thing is. Tell them why it matters. Tell them why it's real. Tell them why it might help fund their education someday. Right? Start a tradition of doing something like that for them every year. Get them interested in it so they start putting some of their own money into things like that, some of their own investments. You know? Buy them one share of stock in a dividend reinvestment program and show them how it works in a solid company that actually makes money. I mean, we'll do a thing on drips in the future as well. I need to get to where I sign up now. But what I'm saying is start living the life you want. Just start doing it. Because no one's stopping you except yourself. No one's holding you back except yourself. No one's preventing you from making the sacrifices you know you need to make except yourself. If you have a spouse that's preventing you, it's time to have a rational, logical conversation about the future of the world with that spouse. That was a question that I had. Could I do a show like that? I'm going to do that show tomorrow. All right. But for today, you start again and plan that life. If you haven't listened to the show on, you know, what to do with that, there's a show, I'll put a link to it from this podcast, that tells you how to write your ideal lifestyle down, make it concrete, make it real in your mind. Start with that step, and everything else starts to take care of itself from there. When you know where you're going, you figure out how to get there. When you don't know where you're going, you never get there. It's that simple. You know, it's how accurate is your map? You can be the smartest guy in the world. I can give you an excellent compass. If I give you a bad map, you'll go to the wrong place. If you have a good map, you're going to go to the right place. So start with a good map, and that is knowing where you want to be 5 years from now and 10 years from now. Make your plan that short. Your plan should not be a 40-year plan. 10 years is the long side of a plan. Way on the long side of a plan. 5 years is better. Figure out where you want to be in 5 years. Write a plan to get there. Be willing to sacrifice whatever you need to get there, other than your emotional health, your spiritual health, and your family. All right? Don't sacrifice those. Everything else is up for grabs. It's up to be sliced, cut, diced, whatever. Doesn't matter. It's all about getting to where you need to go. You do that, you'll get there. It's amazing what happens in an emergency. In an emergency, you always get to the hospital. Why? Because you know that's where you need to go. and everything else gets pushed to the side. It's not important. That's where we're going. So that's the lifestyle. That's how to get to the lifestyle you're looking for. And folks, that's going to wrap it up for today. Again, make sure you go by the site, thesurvivalpodcast.com. Comment on this episode. Comment on other episodes. Download other episodes. I really hope you're getting a lot out of the show. I'm getting a lot out of providing it for you. Go into our forum. Register for the forum if you haven't done so already. Start having conversations with other like-minded members of the show. Start talking about discussing things outside of just my individual shows. Anything you want to discuss, there's probably a forum there for it. Make sure you join the Listener Appreciation Contest. We're not to our 1,000 listeners yet. That will happen this month. Somebody's getting an iPod or $149 in silver. Your choice. And again, this has been Jack Spirko with another edition of the Survival Podcast, helping you figure out how to live that better life if times get tough, or even if they don't.
You can scream and you can holler. It really doesn't matter. All gets spent.